Holy shit, it's True Crime Tuesday. I'm John. I'm here with my ex-wife, Kendra. Tonight, we're going to talk about Miles Bryant, the former police officer who shamed us all by being a very bad criminal. He committed a murder, which is one of the worst crimes. Tonight, on True Crime Tuesday.
The growing calls across the nation to defund the police.
To end policing as we know it.
Off the charts violence in New York City. 11 people shot in just 8 hours on Sunday.
This is about the police officers who every single day put on that uniform and they run towards danger when we run away from it.
Guns up, giddy up, Wolfpack. It's Failure to Stop. It's the number one podcast, the platform where we entertain and inform first responders, and we depress and disturb their friends and family. It's just not a podcast for everyone. We're a true crime podcast. It's different. We're former and current first responders, and on this show, we're not here to lift up the victims or to ask for justice. We just want people to do their jobs, and we want the public to stop having unreasonable demands and stop being stupid. So we'll talk about that here tonight. Like I said, I'm John. I'm an active 911 dispatcher in the field, and I know what you're saying. What do you know about crime? More than you, listener. I've literally done more shit than you have. I've heard more first reports of crimes and figured out where suspects live and all that good stuff. And I solved a murder once. I talked about that on another show. Kendra, former sheriff's deputy down in sunny South Florida. Kendra is a relatively new podcaster, but she's coming into her own every week. She warms up our minds and our hearts with a sunny story of a horrific murder. People being ripped apart like old chickens in the sun. Kendra, what is your totally made up bullshit story about being a fully realized, fully formed adult human being? And last week you mentioned that you have your own keys and you've completed a load of laundry on your own for the first time. What is it this week?
I thought when you said, what's your totally made up or whatever thing, totally real thing, that you're going to ask me what's the total number of people you've murdered in cold blood, because you always make that joke that I killed people.
Oh, no.
As a cop.
It's weird that you wanted to bring it up, though. It's like, like you want to get it all out in the open.
I'm just so mad that our guy this week did such a terrible job at murdering this person.
That was something we were talking about before the show. In some jurisdictions, here's where the true crime stuff comes in from the perspective you're not going to get from morbid or whatever. In some jurisdictions, this is unspoken. In some jurisdictions, it's codified. But when you're a police officer, if you are going to murder someone, you don't dump the body in your own jurisdiction. You got to take him at least two over. Just first one's a courtesy, and then after that, it's you trying to get away with the crime. So if you're not in it for a road trip, if it's not worth the road trip to you, then you know what? You're not really interested in murder. And maybe you should just get a hobby or something. Because you're not super committed. But what was the fake thing that you did this week that makes you a real live human being? And don't say it was complaining about me to the judge, because that's what makes you a monster.
I got rid of all... Stop laughing. This is very serious.
Sorry. My life's awful because of you.
Well, the biggest highlight of my week, I think, was that I actually got around to getting rid of all of the wasp nests that are around my house. And I know what you're thinking.
Oh.
I know what you're thinking.
Oh.
That's a pretty regular thing. That's not that exciting, but
no,
I have to tell you.
No, it's super important. I fucking hate the bees.
My home has been invaded by wasp nests. And there's actually, it's been a rough couple months because every time I leave my house, I get attacked by thousands of wasps. And I don't really know how I'm alive right now.
I don't know either.
Don't
you have a gun?
I do, but I don't have enough ammo to get rid of them all.
Oh, geez.
And I thought about a flamethrower, but then I'd burn my house down.
Well, you don't need flames. What you actually need is smoke. The smoke makes them drunk, and then they'll fly out of the nest, and then that's when you can get them. Folks, send wasp-killing equipment to Kendra. P.O. Box 1060, DeLand, Florida, 32724. That's P.O. Box 1060, DeLand, Florida, 32724. Yeah, we like the spray that foams up or whatever that makes you feel like Spider-Man until you get it in your own eyes, but Kendra really needs ammunition. So, what's your preferred caliber? You're a 9mm girl?
Yeah. It's easy to handle. And
I like 40mm myself.
I've got big hands for a small person, but I like a 9mm. I will
at
need
the gun store, people are always offering me their leftover 22s.
I will need some reinforcement because I'm worried I didn't get all the babies, and I think the next generations will avenge the deaths of their ancestors and come for me. And I'm worried they're going to get into my house and keep me up at night by like playing really loud music or something like that, you know?
Kendra, you weren't here last year, but I actually had I'm well known for the bees. In fact, I don't know if you've seen this, but we literally, if you watch on our YouTube or people in the chats, they literally have a bee emoji that they used to taunt me with. Have you seen that?
I have seen it.
I don't know if you remember my rants and raves about the bees and how the single thing that drives them in their brainless lives is the misery and elimination of the human race and how they outnumber us billions to one, and how they long for our long, painful murder, and how they flee in the winter to their secret hiding places to watch mankind until their inevitable return. And anyway,
that's what they've been doing to me, John.
You can't get honey from them either, the wasps. So pretty anti-bee. I did post a picture last year of me pointing a pistol at a wasp nest. So that is literally how I deal with them. It's not about killing them. You have to send a message when it comes to the bees. So, I do encourage you to send anything that you think that Kendra could use to start winning the war against bees. All bees are invasive. All bees are hostile to our race. And if bees had the advanced evolution, they would have long since crushed us under their furry little feet. So keep that in mind.
Aww.
Folks, the show is brought to you by GhostBed. GhostBed's a website that sells beds, but they're wonderful beds. They have ghost technology built right in. Luckily, GhostBed doesn't have to, it's all of their ghost technology is sustainfully harvested. There's already been plenty of people who've passed away in the history of the human race that they just take from the number of souls already kind of in the other world. They don't have to go out and like harvest fresh kills to make these ghost beds. It's all just very, very reasonably sourced. Kendra right now, she's like, start the episode over.
Now I'm so just listening intently.
Go to the website. You can use the offer code Wolfpack to save 40% off, 0% down, 0% financing. You can go to this website and you can get excellent deals on mattresses, bed frames, and all kinds of extra wares that are designed to give you the best sleep ever as a first responder. They support first responders and veterans, not just of the United States, but of Iraq and other countries as well. So go ahead and use the offer code Wolfpack. Go buy a ghost bed today. Ghost bed is literally what keeps failure to stop going. So please, especially now that this is probably the worst ad read I've ever done for ghost bed, please, in spite of me, go over there and buy a pillow so that they don't pull the plug on me. If GhostBed wants me to go away, I will. All they have to do is email Eric saying, get rid of this guy. You'll never see my face again. So go to bat for me. Please go over there right now. Factor meals. Factor meals, if you're sleeping, then you're eating. That's a sign that you're alive. Instead of going out, going to the grocery store and taking on the throng of inhumanity as people push their carts down the aisle and then sit there and look at a whole thing of mayonnaise while you have to try to get past them without hitting their cart or hitting them or screaming at them until you are hoarse.
Spitting in their open mouth.
Spitting in their open mouth, as Kendra is wont to do. Just go home. Just go home. Because with Factor Meals, your food's already there. Because 10 days ago, you went on their website, you used the offer code WOLFPACK50. You saved 50% off on your first week. You chose a whole bunch of meals. They were delivered fresh to your house. You had over 300 options. Salmon, chicken, broccoli, corn, beans, and Kendra's favorite food.
Salt and vinegar coffee?
Salt and vinegar coffee. They have that Hut Factor Meals.
Hells not yeah.
Not a guarantee. And then you can just go home and have fresh food like what mom used to make for you, if in fact your mother did love you. Again, all hypothetical for me. We appreciate Factor Meals for supporting the show. Wolfpack 50 is how you use your special Wolfpack discount code to save 50% off the first time that you are there. Also, the wellness company is supporting the show. Kendra, you can own your wellness, your health, and your freedom with the wellness company. Get well and stay well with solutions designed by the top doctors, top men. They offer natural supplements, melatonin to help you sleep, immune support, daily essentials for your mind and energy, digestion, metabolism, all the stuff your body's already doing. Help it do it better with the wellness company. If you need prescriptions like antibiotics, you'd stock up before the next emergency, medical kits, first aid kits. Get a membership today. You can free yourself from Big Pharma that we all as conservatives automatically hate at the wellness company. Get 10% off with the offer code WOLFPACK. We appreciate them. Also, something that we're doing right now. If you drop a super chat and then you leave in the comment for the super chat, the We Defy Foundation, you can become a sponsor of that. You can leave the money right here. What'll happen is that I will carefully watch every episode of Failure to Stop and write it all down and send it to Eric. This is my task. My free time has been canceled because now I have to watch over 10 hours of programming per week. I'm in at least 3 of those hours, but I have to now watch the rest of the shows. Leave the comment, We Defy, and this will go to the We Defy Foundation. What is that? We Defy provides combat veterans just of the United States, I did check, coping with military-connected disabilities, a long-term means to overcome their challenges through Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Kendra used to do some sort of martial art, didn't you?
I did. I earned my black belt in said martial art. So I am
a
black belt.
Can you say what it is?
It's top secret information.
So you have to hear it on Sunday night, I guess. Kendra, by the way, she has a white belt, and she will fight you. So, or if you don't want to go through us, go to the WeDefyFoundation.org. We just encourage you to support them, helping Tansy lose weight and giving him purpose in his life outside of being a father and podcasting, which he desperately needed. So we appreciate that. Also, tonight's case is a viewer submission.
It is.
We like our viewers. If you have a true crime case you want to submit to True Crime for us to cover, you can send it in an email. The E stands for electronic.
Electronic.
TrueCrimeDrama@gmail.com. Now, if you're a listener, it's TrueCrime, JRAMA@gmail.com. So it's not True Crime Drama with a D. When Eric Tansy pronounces your name J Rama because he doesn't get it or listen, he's actually just helping the people at home. So truecrimejrama@gmail.com.
It is. I've had people ask me what's up with that, because it's not a name. It's a intentionally misspelled name from a character on Entourage whose name is Johnny Drama. And because of the way we pronounce drama,
she needed something, and she was going to be Kendra up late, and we thought it was too soon.
I was going to be Kendra down early. That's
Kendra down early. That's awful. Oh man, I don't think you just realized what you set yourself up for. Look at Will Cray right now. Comment. Damn you, know, Will Cray.
That's fine. Whatever. What are you going to do?
We're not doing the show now.
It's already out there. I said it.
I wish I had a nickname.
You do. You've got like 15 nicknames.
Oh, yeah, but none of them stick. The problem is that Eric told everyone my name before I even came on the network. So I never had a chance. So with that in mind, why don't you tell us about tonight's show, Kendra?
Okay, John. Old Loblolly. Stub.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Old Loblolly. That was a good
too
one.
Too Tall John.
Too Tall.
You son of a bitch. What are your other nicknames?
That was the one in court, yeah.
You rat bastard.
Oh, yep. I remember that one. Yep. That was when the bailiff was holding you back. She brought
he
in
was
a...
calling you a rat bastard.
Yeah, the bailiff was. You were physically acting out, but you know to keep your mouth closed. And he was saying, you rat bastard.
I was mouthing the words and he was saying them.
Oh, I don't know why, but for some reason a bailiff calling me that is very funny to me. It's not that late. I have no excuse for thinking that that's that funny.
I'm joking.
The bailiff during the court proceedings, like, so we have records to say that on or about the 13th, the bailiff just goes, you rat bastard. And everyone looks at him and he goes, I'm joking.
He goes to take somebody in custody and he goes, give me that. Like to give your hands, like, give me that.
Give me that.
We're referencing a skit from I Think You Should Leave, which is a fantastic show that I've been laughing.
I've been forced to watch against my will.
He laughed. He's
I
okay.
laughed a lot. Since Kendra cannot start the show, I will read the show now.
No.
I will read an article. No, hold on. Okay. I'm excited about this case.
Okay.
Because unlike most of the cases that we cover here on True Crime, this one is happening right now. It's a very new case.
Yes.
We're talking about a girl who disappeared from Georgia in 2022, right after the Dylan Rounds thing happened, actually, which... If you haven't heard already, Dylan Rounds' body has been found, which is good for the family. It was found as part of a plea bargain. This channel, our predecessors, Eric and Andrea, once had an episode with Jim Terry that was a thing of legends. I think it was still, to this day, remains our highest rated episode ever. You and I have not invited Jim Terry back. I thought about doing that just to see, but we still occasionally get mean comments from people who are mad at us for inviting Jim Terry on the show. But anyway... So, Jim Terry's a very bad guy. Anyway, this is about an ex-Georgia policeman officer accused of killing a teen. He faces a new charge, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is about former police officer Miles Bryant, who was a police officer in Doraville, Georgia. I'm reading now from an article by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, as gathered in the aggregate source Police One. Doraville, Georgia. A former Doraville police officer accused of killing a teenage girl and hiding her body near a Gwinnett County Creek now faces an unrelated burglary charge, which burglary is also not a good crime.
No.
Miles Bryant, 22, young guy, is charged with murdering the disappearance and death of Susanna Morales, a Middle Creek High School junior who vanished July 26th while walking home from a friend's house. This was in 2021, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, she went missing in 21.
All right. Let's show a picture of Susanna Morales. Of course, she's just a 16-year-old girl. Full of life, full of potential. Definitely didn't deserve what happened to her. This is the a-hole who had something to do with her undoing. He is going to court this June, and we'll see everything that comes out of that. When do you want to just jump in here and tell the case? Articles aren't going to tell it in a nice true crime story. So I want to hand it off to you, Kendra.
Tell us
the story.
Like you said, it's pretty new. So there's not a whole lot going on with this. It's not a super long story, but essentially what happened, the facts of the case are Susanna Morales was walking home from a friend's house, around 10 o'clock at night. In July 21, she did not return home, and she had correspondence with her mother via text message at like 9:30 around there.
9:40. Yeah. She had gone to a friend's house. She'd been there for about 4 hours. So she had gotten there at like 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. She walked there. She was walking home. You got to remember at about 9:40 at night in the mid-July in Georgia. She's walking home in daylight to twilight hours. She's leaving. She's going home.
Yeah, she's walking home. I don't think it's a very far walk, but she makes it to an area of Norcross, a neighborhood in Norcross, Georgia, which is pretty close to where she lives. Her phone last pinged at this location and near Stephen Reynolds, which is a road that runs through Norcross there. Later, it comes out that there's some, again, this is very fresh. She hasn't even gone to trial yet, but there are some blurbs from the warrant affidavit that states that her cell phone had some sort of video evidence on it that she got into a vehicle at this location. They weren't able to determine who was driving or what the vehicle was, but essentially she hitched a ride with somebody who we now know was Miles Bryant. But
she may have hitched a ride. She may have been told to get into a car at gunpoint. We don't know why, but when someone's walking, they're going to stay within a certain range of a cell phone tower. And when you collect all these historical records from a cell phone, all of a sudden, if you're across town in no time, the only way you can do that is in a vehicle. Like people know that you're not flying through the air. So it's an obvious deduction that somehow she got into a car, which was never part of the plan because she was walking home. Right. Where she was from wasn't far away. Keep going.
So she was missing for about 6 months. And in February of the following year, 2022.
Hold on. She was missing for 12 hours before she was reported missing.
Sure.
Sorry, I don't mean to step on you. I just think it's important to go by the facts of the case. She told her mom at 9:40 she was going to come home. She would be there, you know, hopefully around 10 o'clock. She was gone the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
They reported her missing around 10 o'clock the next morning, which, okay, so what's going on here? She says, I'm on my way home, Mama, and she doesn't show up. I think, I'm not saying anything bad about the parents at all. I'm just saying, like, you know, wouldn't you be more concerned that, you know, particularly once it's 1, 2, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., that she hasn't shown up? I mean, that would be very concerning. And perhaps her parents were scared shitless throughout the whole night, and they just had no idea what to do.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Brandon Swanson, how we talked about, like, if it's certainly an urgent matter, why are you not contacting law enforcement? So I'm not, and Brandon Swanson was not a juvenile, you know, he's a college kid. He was still young, but he wasn't 16 years old walking around at night. And I'm thinking, because they did, I guess law enforcement treated it as a runaway initially. And I'm just making assumptions here. I have absolutely no idea. And this is not a knock to, like you said, it's not a knock to her parents or her. I'm just saying perhaps this was a habit of hers and maybe that's why it wasn't so urgent because, you know, she's a 16-year-old girl. Maybe she lied a lot about, hey, I'll be home and then just wouldn't show up or she ran away from home frequently. I don't know that. I'm just making an assumption.
It could also be that she doesn't have a contentious relationship with her parents. She's just being irresponsible, right? She's just going out and having a good time and not coming home. The reason why I mentioned this is I did watch the press conference and the police took some heat for saying, why didn't you investigate this as a missing persons? You treated her as a runaway. I'm going to tell you right now, folks, that when you enter a kid into NCIC as missing, there's a subcategory of missing endangered or just missing runaway. And unless we have some kind of indication that you know, she was abducted by force or whatever, unless we have that indicator, we can't say that. So the runaway category doesn't mean that we're not treating it as a suspicious problem. In fact, missing juveniles is one of the highest priority cases that we work, just because kids are important, kids are in danger. And also there's a lot of federal laws that we have to follow. But also if you do an NCIC entry and you enter a missing child as endangered, it flips a lot of switches in terms of getting the federal authorities involved. And now looking back through retrospect, you could say, well, you know, wouldn't it have been great if we had had the FBI rappelling out of helicopters to look for her, which we will, when we break down the case, you realize that wouldn't have changed anything. But you can't tell certain authorities of the state or the federal government something that's not true. Like you can't report, you can't over report a crime as to what's happened. So if someone's missing, if a juvenile's missing and they're either just missing or runaway, it's very, very serious to police. But we can't say that she's a missing person endangered unless we have that information. And so later people will criticize the police saying, why did you treat her as though she's a runaway when we have no indication to believe that? Well, it's just a category of a missing person.
Right.
And so don't overreact when you hear that the police treated her as a runaway, like they don't care. Because even runaways, we have to investigate and resolve, Kendra.
Yeah, we had a lot of, we had a few group homes in the city that I worked in, and I had like two of them in my zone, and I would always go to take runaway reports because they would have to report if they didn't come, if they missed their curfew by like an hour or something like that. It was their policy to report them to law enforcement as missing. So I was there all the time dealing with that. And they would come back like within a few hours usually, or the next day. But if this, you don't treat it with any less urgency as far as like you said, it's still a missing juvenile. But when you repeatedly go to the same house over and over and over for the same issue, again, I'm not saying this is Susanna's case, I'm just saying, you can't treat it as an endangered juvenile and send out an Amber Alert every single time. Unless, like you said, there's some sort of exigent circumstance to say that this child is actually in danger. Like we had, here's a good example of that. We had a runaway. She was a runaway. She left home when she wasn't supposed to, and she was out with her friends. She was, I think she was like 14 or 15. And she left without some medications that she really needed. She had a horrible lung issue, I think, or something. Sorry. She had a seizure disorder. very different from a lung issue. But she left the house without her meds, and that made it a little bit more, that stepped it up. And unfortunately, somebody found her in a pond the next day. She had passed away. But those little things make it something urgent.
When you actually do the entry and you're filling out the form, there's actually there's a modifier there that you can put that they're in danger because of medical conditions. Like, if someone needs, like she said, something to, even a diabetic patient, if they go a while without insulin, that would be a reason why we would step up our response. And every single night, every single weekend in a jurisdiction near you, a kid's running away, a kid's disappearing, a kid's taking off with mom or dad's car. And if we sound the siren every single time, an Amber Alert's not going to have any meaning anymore. We're already in a situation now where most people don't pay too much attention to Amber Alerts.
Yeah.
But every single time when someone who's 15, 16, 17, has a behavioral issue where they're not agreeing with parents or they're just being irresponsible, we can't have a siren going off in the community saying something is wrong. So that's, I'm not trying to downplay what happened to Morales. It's very sad and there's no excuse. And part of the reason why this case is important and deserves to be told is not only because of her vulnerability and her innocence, the fact that she didn't do anything to bring this on herself. We talk about a lot of cases where people bring stuff on themselves. She was just walking home. She was doing nothing wrong. But this being a former police officer is something that is especially egregious. And so that's why we're covering that. But it's understanding how missing children get entered into a system and how law enforcement responds to that is always something that other podcasts very frequently get wrong.
I think people don't understand that runaways are treated the same as any other missing. I think when you hear the word runaway, people don't get, they think that we just go, oh, she's a runaway, and we don't do any investigation after that. That's not the case. But so she is a runaway for a while, but she is gone for 6 months, which is a very long time to be gone. And in February of 2022, a passerby finds her in a wooded area near a creek, just at the county line.
Drowning Creek,
which I thought was funny because I'm like, I don't know. I just thought it was, I found it entertaining. So They find her and they, she was a skeletal, they classified her as skeletal remains at this point, but they matched her dental records and they identified her as Suzanne Morales.
And with DNA too.
Correct. So
she was about 20 miles away from home, from where she was last seen.
Yeah. I don't know if you have that picture, if you want to put it up, but it's, yeah. Okay.
There's no scale here to indicate how far they are apart, but there's see these towns, they're whole towns. So,
correct.
Yeah,
Atlanta is like to the left. So this is kind of a bigger. I would say this is like a bigger suburb area. Maybe not all the way out in Drowning Creek, but Norcross, where that she was located, which is the circle on the left there. Or it's not located. I apologize. That's where she lived. I think that's a pretty populated suburb of Atlanta. So. Anyway, upon investigation of this scene, authorities locate a firearm within some sort of proximity to her body. And they, I'm assuming they ran this firearm and it came back stolen.
That's what you would do, Kendra. If you're a cop, if you come across a gun, you're going to pick it up, right? You're going to read the serial number off of it, probably to your dispatcher because you're too lazy to go over to your car. We'll run a simple gun query where we type in the serial number and then it comes back with an NCIC hit on it saying it's a stolen gun. It'll say the agency who reported it stolen. It'll have the make, model, the caliber, the date that it was entered, any particular information. It'll say, you know, like it was reported stolen by the owner. And it would say that, you know, on this date and time. And if there's anything unusual about the weapon or if it was taken with an extended magazine or something in it, there might be that information in there. It's something that you find out as fast as running a driver's license. It's really not an investigation there with a gun. It takes 2 seconds.
Right. So we are both assuming because we don't have the warrant affidavit or any of the law enforcement incident reports, but I'm assuming the gun came back stolen, which like you said, the information would be in the hit. Is what they call it. And the owner information would reveal that Miles Bryant happened to report his gun stolen about a day or two after Suzanne Morales went missing.
2 hours, 11 a.m.
Was it 2 hours? Okay.
It was just 2 hours. And I don't mean to correct you, but let's set the record straight.
Please correct me.
Let's set the record straight. We've got a police officer who we now know, who is at least being charged with the abduction, murder, and now rape of this girl. The police officers have come out and said that they believe that he's done it, and he'll get his day in court, and they're going to make the case. They're going to do their best. But if so, and I have to say that he's still presumed innocent until proven guilty, because that is the system that we can't preach every week about who's guilty of what, doing what, and what's admissible when, and then not mention that the current state of affairs today is that Miles Bryant is innocent because we haven't proven him guilty. But the case that the state's attorney's office in Georgia is going to set out is this: that Miles Bryant came across her walking home and through force, so coercion or deception, got her into the vehicle, took her to places unknown, a crime was committed, and then after that crime, after Morales was deceased, her body was placed in this wooded area near Drowning Creek. And this idiot, Bryant, dropped his gun, I guess. And then, this weapon, which is his going to be the same thing as him signing his name to the crime, because who knows what it's got on it, DNA, fingerprints. I don't know if Georgia's a state where you have to register a firearm. I think probably, otherwise, why take this next step? But if you've lost it, you may as well have just do nothing about it, because hopefully the good guys are never going to find it. But if they do, as soon as they run that serial number, you're in the FBI's NCIC database as saying my gun was stolen. Mm-hmm. And so they find the skeletal remains over here on your left, and on the right, they find a gun. They run the gun. Again, the serial number is like 8 digits long, and all of a sudden, they got his name right away. Very, very, very easy. If he had not entered his gun as stolen, if he had not reported it as stolen, there may have been more investigation needed. Again, I don't know if his firearm was already registered in the state of Georgia. Somebody in the chats is just going to have to tell me. If Bosco's here, something, maybe they can explain that. But where I live, we don't register firearms. So
yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I would venture to say Georgia doesn't. I don't know for sure, but in Florida, we don't. And I know you have to, like, if that happened in, let's say he didn't report it stolen and it happened here, they could still find out whose gun it is because you just go back to, you trace it back to where it was purchased and they keep records of all of that. But there's no state registry of like, this guy owns this gun, like with vehicles. There's, it just doesn't, it's not a thing. So if he hadn't have, I mean, he still would have gotten caught, but what an idiot. 2 hours after he got, he claimed was that he left his truck unlocked and it was broken into and the person that broke into it stole a firearm. Like you said, this report was taken two hours after she went missing. Obviously, nobody really knew that she was missing at that point. So if, to me, the window, which doesn't really matter too much, but would be between 9:45 and 11:45. By the time he killed her, drove her out, and then came back home to make this report, which is kind of quick. We don't know the manner of death yet. I'm assuming she was shot. I have no idea.
The chief has already said she was not shot. That's what makes it even more funny, Kendra, is that he didn't kill her with the weapon and then leave the gun behind.
Or ditch it somewhere.
If the gun was not used to kill her, if she was strangled or smothered or whatever else, if the gun wasn't used in the commission of the actual murder itself, it might have been used in terms of getting her into the car. It might have been the force or coercion to get her into the vehicle. But it wasn't part of the manner of death. They're able to say that conclusively. They were still investigating the manner of death at the time of the press conference. They also, in spite of these having been skeletal remains at the time when they were recovered after 6 months that she's out there in this wetland area or trees or whatever, they've been able to determine probably possibly through the remnants of other DNA that she was sexually assaulted, which is a terrible shame, which also, if true, if Bryant committed that egregious crime, and of course, right now he stands innocent of those charges until proven guilty, it would also make him a pedophile and a murderer. And possibly a stalker as well. There's another case related that they mentioned in the press conference about him having previously stalked a woman that he knew in high school.
Yep.
Her name was Elisha Bates. No relation. Elisha has been
clarifying, John.
Elisha has got on the news, and she says she feels damn lucky, of course, because Morales, you know, Bryant was involved with Morales afterwards, and you know, was the cause of her demise, and so Bates feels lucky that it wasn't her. Bates has told local news there, which is called 11 Alive News, which I feel like is a bit in your face when they do any kind of death reporting that the news is called 11 Alive.
We're alive and you're not. Ha ha.
Yes, we're alive and reporting on the dead, but only, as you know, seems kind of unfair. But anyway, she told the reporters that she would be willing to testify against Brian at his trial if they let her. However, a middle school social studies student told her that would not be possible because prior bad acts are not admissible as evidence at a guilt phase of a trial. So it doesn't matter if he previously stalked someone or raped someone or murdered someone. No one can go before a jury in the case of Morales and talk about those things. Now, if he's convicted and he goes to a penalty phase, any of his prior bad acts can come in as aggravating circumstances at that point, just because it's his history. You know, how should we punish him? What kind of threat does he pose to the community? Well, if he's guilty of murdering Morales, you know, hopefully he'll be behind bars the rest of his life. But it's just generally true that it's only the penalty phase where prior bad acts come in. So it really bothered me that the news is going to put that on TV, that this Bates character is ready and able to testify against Bryant. But not going to be allowed at any point.
Right. And the media in this this whole situation was less than informed and less than impressive.
Less than professional. I don't know.
Line of questioning.
I don't know if you guys we did an episode of Hard Time last Friday where we did some news reports from 1984. And I got to tell you, the news back then was really, really solid, really professional. Really a higher standard of journalism. Whenever you watch old news reports, you could see how far the news has fallen. I'm going to go ahead and play a clip I believe this is from 11 Alive News, again, throwing it into the face of, of the Morales' family that that the news anchors are still alive. I'm going to see playing this, if you can catch which of my peccadilloes this really bothers.
Ron and Jennifer, Jasmine Morales says that today was particularly hard for the family already because it was Susanna's funeral. But to hear that a police officer is now charged in connection with their death makes her even more sadder and angrier.
Even more sadder and angrier. Even more sadder and angrier. Now, I know what you're thinking. John, you pedantic ass. You say stupid things all the time. That's true. I get paid a lot less than this woman to do it. And also,
you also didn't go to school for that.
Yes, she's a professional journalist. So she goes specifically out there to cover the news. I presume she got multiple takes on this. Maybe she was live at the scene. Why would she be? I don't know. There's no reason for that. I don't know why the news does that anymore.
Particularly, she was alive at the scene.
She was alive at the scene. She was standing outside a building at night, which makes you wonder why she's doing that. Maybe was she literally at the jail? Like, he's behind me in the jail right now. Like, why would you?
That's
do
what
that?
They do. They go to the jail.
I don't know.
And they just film in front of it.
Just for the authenticity of the location, I guess. I don't know. But she's not good at modifying adjectives. So I'm upset about that. More angrier and even more sadder. And yeah, Susanna Morales, pretty much what she's saying is true. That the idea that when they find out after 6 months that her daughter missing has been found, skeletal remains, that she was killed, the person responsible is a police officer. Yeah, the outrage is going to pile on. I get that. So what yeah. she's saying is the context of what she's saying fundamentally correct. But I do have to go after a little bit about how she did it. And why? Because there's no podcast right now on what happened with Miles Bryant. So I can't do other podcast stupidest takes. I can only do journalist stupidest takes. And I actually have a bunch more, if you don't mind, unless you want to finish out the case and bring us up to speed on where we currently are.
Well, we're on a roll. So let's
we're on a roll.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play you some clips here from the press conference. And we have some journalists here, some of whom know less about this case than I do. Some of whom have very stupid questions. And a police chief for Gwinnett Police Chief, who's very smart, very good investigator. You could tell he's not just a political appointee. One thing I want to mention before I play these clips is there's a bunch of clips I'm not playing. A lot of race baiting clips. Mm-hmm. For those of you who are listening, not that it matters at all, because we don't need to stoop to their level. At one point, they tried to get him to stoop, and he wouldn't do it. This police chief's a black guy, and they're accusing him of being insensitive to Latino people. And I don't know if Latino people and black people got some kind of beef, but for me, as an uncolored person, or a person without color, which is what I prefer to be called, they often kind of group themselves all together as people of color. I've just heard that on the media. I don't know if people want that or not. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know. But he wouldn't go for it. Like, at one point, they're saying, you know, that the Hispanic community doesn't trust the police. We have a very bad relationship with you. You know, how do you respond to that? And he's just like, well, we serve all the people of the county. And the fact that we solved this case is proof of that. In fact, we worked very hard to solve this case. So how can you say that we don't care about crimes against Hispanic people that when we solved the case of Susanna Morales and we're getting ready to charge the black guy that killed her? I honestly have no idea why we have to throw race into this case at all, because this entire case doesn't involve a white person that I have found so far.
It sensationalizes it, and you can't sell something that isn't sensational. So that's sure. why.
It also because, just diminishes it. All it diminishes all people.
And I bet
why?
You.
Because Morales didn't deserve to die, and this chief doesn't deserve to be criticized about issues of race, and race didn't come up in any of the crimes. And this guy Bryant isn't looking when he's thinking to himself that he wants to commit an act of sexual assault or murder. He's not like thinking like, I want to make sure it's the right race. Like, this, the psychology of this doesn't figure into it. He's all about power. He's all about his self-gratification or whatever mm-hmm. his psychology is, but it doesn't come down to that level of society. It doesn't come down to that level of philosophy or ideology or beliefs or you know, anything that's systemic or anything like that. But the news right. can't sell something that doesn't have the word race in it. And if there's no other case that proves it, it's this one. Because race is not, you cannot make it an issue in this case, Kendra.
Right, because you can't, well, you can, I suppose, because they're trying to, but a lot of the time, it's almost like you can't make it a race thing unless there's a white person involved, because that's the narrative right now, right, is that all white people are racist, and if there's, you know, like with law enforcement doesn't care about people of color because they handle the cases differently or what have you. And there's no, like you said, there's no white person to really use as a scapegoat in this. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm not saying that's the people. I was going to say earlier, I doubt that most people of color in the community feel the way that the news is saying they feel. They just say that shit in interviews to spark, you know, you're muted, John.
Thank you. I do that every show now. But the news primes them to feel that way, though, Kendra.
Yes.
The news, by injecting race into every case, it makes people feel persecuted when they're not being persecuted. Case right. in point, they're going in front of this police chief and saying, this is what's happening in social media, that people are writing things in English and Spanish, and that we don't feel like we're protected by your police department. And the chief's just like, well, those are assertions that you're making up. And we've solved this case, and this is proof of that. And we worked on as hard on this case as we do any other. And we yep. serve all the people of this county. But it just makes me feel sad, because the Hispanic community there in Gwinnett, or Black people in wherever, or whatever people in wherever, right. they feel like the police or those in authority don't care about them. And it's because of the news. And correct. what we refuse to acknowledge is that the police are enforcing the law for everyone. And here's where the stooping comes in. Has it not occurred to you, communities, wherever you are, whatever you are, we have police officers who are Black. We have police officers who are Hispanic, Asians, even women. Kendra was a police officer.
Even women.
Even women are being represented by modern police. So stop. If representation matters, you claim it does, I would come back at you to say, like, what you talking about? It doesn't matter that much. You're being represented in law enforcement. Your communities are being policed by themselves. We govern ourselves as a people. Gwinnett is made up of a population of people, and from that population come the police officers. So
right.
there you are. You're being governed by yourselves, and you're blaming your neighbor because you don't like how they're policing you.
And you know, if you look at, like you said, if you look at the demographics of a community, and then you look at the law enforcement of that community, they tend to match because there's just the pool is bigger. Obviously, if you're in an area with a pretty like large range of races, then it's going to be a mixed bag. But there's places down here, like there's entire police departments that are basically all Black because of the area that they're in. It's just the way that, I don't know, population works. But you're right. It's kind of like, well, I don't want to get into a race conversation because we're not stooping to that level, but it blows my mind because a lot of it is just stemmed from fear mongering from the news. It's all made up. It's all prompted by news outlets so that they can make more money and drive some sort of narrative so they can keep stories coming in. And it's to the detriment of the community. So I would venture to say that most of the people in the community do trust law enforcement. Like you said, or like Chief said, we solved the case. Obviously, we care about it. I don't know.
The chief does make some remarks here, and one of these clips I'm going to play is about the public trust, and we'll address that. But this guy's so cool and well spoken, and knows a lot more about the case than I do. So why don't we just have him on the show without his will by playing these clips? I'm going to go ahead and throw these on here, and I've got a smart comment to make about each one of these. Otherwise, why would I have picked them? Here we go.
Of course.
And I should have looked up his name. Let me find the chief of the Gwinnett Police Department. I'm going to do it right now.
Why don't you play it and I'll look it up and we can introduce him at
okay,
the end.
Okay, I'll play it and then you look up the name. I'll play it. Okay, here we go. Okay. Smart, Kendra.
Your message to our community, you will have a
missing girl in our home. I think obviously call the police.
So the question here is, what do we do in our community if we have a missing girl? What should we do? She says, what do we do in our community if we have a missing girl? And he gives expert advice.
What can you read your message to our community if we have a missing girl in our home?
I think, obviously, call the police.
I love him.
Just great advice. What do you do if you've got a crime? Call the police.
Obviously, call the police.
What was he going to say? Like, well, you're definitely going to want to tell your community advocate and report it to a mental health counselor right away. Here's another great clip from the chief.
Final questions. Anything else?
Any idea how long her body was there? With it being half a mile away from the residence and she was already reported missing, what took so long to find her body if it was only half a mile away from
the home? Well, it was certainly not a half a mile away. It was numerous miles away. We're talking about from Norcross, Georgia to Lawrenceville, okay? Secondly, Susanna was recovered in the Woodlands, so there was a reason why, you know, she wasn't readily discovered.
I like how there's just a reporter there that knows less about the case than me.
I love his professionalism, but also his complete sarcastic deadpan delivery of like, well, it certainly was not half a mile away. It was numerous. It was almost 20 miles away. So I don't know this reporter got that information, but what the fuck?
I know. I looked at his face. I wanted him to just be like, do this, like some kind of gif or something where he would like show some sort of disbelief. Like, where are you getting that from? And he goes, well, first of all, it certainly wasn't within a half a mile of her house. This is 20 miles away. And also the reason why we didn't recover her body is because it wasn't on the fucking sidewalk. You know, like if it was on a sidewalk half a mile outside her house, we probably would have found it right away. But this is 20 miles away and it was in the woods. So that's the reason why we didn't find her. And if you listen closely, you could hear the reporter be like, oh, okay. And the subtext of that is, I'm sorry for talking. I wish I could leave. Is there any way that I can slink away without losing all of my reporter credulity right now?
Please erase this from your brain. And
she literally backs right up into the bushes in Homer Simpson style. She literally just immediately leaves the room for saying that Susanna Morales was discovered. Or that her body was found just half a mile away from her home, and that there was no reason for that.
Yeah, I also want to make an observation that Chief McClure, by the way, his name's J.D. McClure, which is a fantastic name.
Oh, it's a great name, great cop name, J.D. McClure.
Yes, it is. he is the chief of Gwinnett County Police, and he is not I think one of the reasons why they're hammering him a lot, one of the many reasons about the trust and what are you going to do to fix this in the future and all that, is because the perpetrator was a law enforcement officer, but he was a law enforcement officer in Doraville, which isn't even the Gwinnett County Police took over because of the conflict.
That's where the body
interest.
Was found. Yeah. And the conflict of interest. Yes.
So, you know, it's like they did the Doraville Police Department. As soon as they got the warrant, like, hey, one of your guys has a fucking warrant for murder. They obviously terminated him, and they came out with a statement. But this guy's being held to account for stuff that he didn't have anything to do with. So,
yeah,
he
actually,
handled it very well.
The first charge before the murder charge came out was that they knew he was responsible from the firearm. They couldn't prove necessarily that he had been involved in the murder, but so they initially charged him with withholding evidence of a death.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is a very serious misdemeanor or felony, which is enough to get him fired at that point. So they didn't go straight. They didn't go off half-cocked like people mm-hmm. want us to do in the case of Justin DiPietro. They took their time with the case. They went after it methodically and correctly. And yes, the guy, Miles Bryant, worked for Doraville PD. And this entire press conference, people are coming after this chief and saying, talking about the loss of trust and whatever, how do we get this back? And he says, you know, that we even have anger in our own ranks. Like, no, nothing makes a cop mad like a bad police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's demands from the reporters of like, you know, what are you going to do to stop this from happening ever again? I'm going to play this clip in a minute. And it's just like, what do you mean? We can't stop it from happening ever again. A police officer's a human being. A human being has, you know, they're capable of great acts of good and they're capable of great acts of evil. And we don't know necessarily what people are capable of. We do our best to try to screen for that. We try to do psychology testing and we try to get people to put the thing on their butt when they do the polygraph and the whole deal. We do everything that we can, but you can't mm-hmm. screen for the future and you can't prevent future crimes. And I know, Kendra, this is a sticking point for you, but what will happen to the quality of police officers once we're defunded?
Right. I think I was going to make the point that this guy also, this guy being Bryant, Miles Bryant, he was also very, very young. And in some of the videos of him stalking that Bates elite, I can't remember her first name. I apologize.
It's Alasha Bates. Alasha no relation.
Bates. No, Alasha Bates, no relation. When he was stalking her and knocking on her door, her neighbors got it on Ring and he was wearing a uniform, like he's in the National Guard or something. So he's a young guy. He was a sheriff's deputy before he went to Doraville Police Department. He's in the military. He's too young to really have a lot of life experience. So he hasn't had a lot of time to fuck up for them to vet him on anything. And sometimes people just fall through the cracks because they're humans. And he hasn't had an opportunity in his life to become a scumbag enough to be vetted out of a process at a law enforcement agency. So sometimes I've said this before, sometimes shit just fucking happens and it's nobody's fault. It's the evil people that exist in the world.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do to prevent it.
In fact, I'm going to go on record now to predict and possibly lay money that a police officer will murder someone again. Possibly.
Yes.
A 16-year-old girl. I'm going to go with the easy money and say it's going to happen again because people are evil. And like one of all the cases we've looked at before, we have a long history of people who have stalking behaviors. Your Brian Cohes, your Ed Kempers, your Dennis Raiders, they all have a fascination with law enforcement. It's entirely possible this guy went into this field because law enforcement would give him the ability to find people's records. This Bates person he caught up with, they went to high school together. You know, how did he find out where she lived? It's possible that he ran her license plates or ran her mm-hmm. driver's license or he's using the assets that he has as a police officer specifically to become a better predator. And we have to obviously try very hard, but the truth is we're doing a great job in spite of Miles Bryant, because look at the vast numbers of police officers, people like Kendra, who have a very low kill per day ratio, very low rate of stalking. And by and large, police officers have some of the highest integrity and moral fiber of anyone you'll meet. Doesn't mean they're not assholes. Doesn't mean that I'm going to have a beer with them, but it does mean that they're good people by and large. And if you look at the arrest rate amongst police officers for abduction, rape, and murder, it's far below the general population. So correct. Remember, when you're hearing statistics, make sure you're comparing two numbers. And the general population of police officers, by and large, are far, far less responsible for crime.
And don't
assume that means the thin blue line is covering for each other, because we all hate each other over here in the thin blue line. Don't we?
There is no, yeah, anyway. Don't use outliers to represent the rest of the community, because that's what this is. People use mm-hmm. outliers.
Yeah, the exception proving a rule is a logical fallacy, which is something yes. children do. So I want to present this last clip and then we'll round it out. But this one's my favorite one. And I have to pause it at just the right moment. So I have to be super, super, super focused on this one.
Okay.
Keep the public trust if you have someone wearing the uniform committing a crime like this.
Right. So again, as I said earlier, we work hard to build relationships in the community. When you have an event like this happen, tragic loss of a young, beautiful girl at the hands of a law enforcement officer, there's no doubt that some of that trust is going to be broken. However, the challenge for us and the law enforcement community as a whole is to continue to build those relationships and build those contacts. So Anybody else have any other questions?
So you just mentioned trust. So they're going to be new trainings. What are y'all going to do to make sure that this hopefully doesn't happen ever again?
Are we going to train police officers not to stalk and rape and murder people? What does she mean? Is there going to be new trainings? She has to have like misspoken there, because that's just the stupidest thing. Is there going to be new trainings to prevent this from ever happening again? Kendra?
It's like a tack on to the like sexual harassment spiel that you get or whatever, workplace violence. Like, don't stalk anyone. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't murder anybody.
The funny thing is that so there was a beat you heard there where he answered a question. No one was saying anything. And then he's like, anybody else got any questions? And she goes, ooh, I think of something. And then she's like, this is the question that she has. And everyone else who just wants the press conference to end is all rolling their eyes. And they're like, would they just want to go to lunch? And she asks a stupid question. How are we going to train people to not murder again? We just addressed this, that there's no way that you can stop all eventualities. But I'll let the chief answer. Take it away, AJ. It was AJ, right?
JD.
JD, take it away, JD.
The Gwinnett County Police Department we've done what we needed to do here. We've met our mission. We've solved this crime. And I don't want to just have us reduce that as just, you know, something marginal. That was an exhaustive and extensive investigation. And so I'm really proud of our personnel for putting this case together. In terms of standards, I think the Gwinnett County Police Department has the highest standards for our employees, and I'm sure the Doraville Police Department will likewise address their policies and procedures as well.
I like how, again, you know, they're like, he's like, just a reminder, I'm not responsible for the Doraville hiring him, but I'm sure they're fixing it over there. So please address all complaints to the Doraville Police Department when it comes to this specific guy.
He's a good chief. I like him.
Good job to that chief. Yeah. If you work in Gwinnett, good for you. Hopefully he treats you right, but seems like a smart guy. I liked how sharp he was, and I like how he didn't go for any of their race-baiting bullshit. And yes. He said that he just talked about the highest level of professionalism. That's what you want from a chief. I'm glad that in spite of her being missing 6 months, that they did investigate this case and that nothing was held back in prosecuting Bryant. So case in point, we know there's no thin blue line protecting each other here. The police were outraged that a 16-year-old girl was abducted, raped, and murdered, and they found the man responsible for it, terminated him from that thin blue line, and then now they are pursuing him as ardently as any other criminal suspect, Kendra.
Yep. And I really, really, just to wrap it up, I guess the trial is forthcoming. It's going to happen in June of this year. We'll keep you updated as it goes. There's really not much more information right now. Like I said, there is a warrant and an affidavit that obviously had been signed and issued, and all of the case information will be in that. That will probably come out during the trial, and we'll get a little bit more of a backstory. They do believe. That they did not know each other. So this was a random act, which typically is not the case in true crime. So this is one of those situations where it's like extra scary, right? Because it is just a random act of violence and horrific crimes against humanity, really. But
an early theory was this, and I would have to double check this to make sure this is accurate. So everything that goes after this is speculation based off of what I've heard, but we're going to find out more as we go.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't throw this out there lightly, and I could very well be wrong on it, and I'm prepared to eat my words on it. But I had heard that the female or the friend that she was going to visit that night was at a specific apartment complex where Bryant lived and also performed duties as a security guard. Basically, he lived in an apartment complex. The people who rented him the apartment knew he was a police officer, so they paid him also to be the security officer of the apartment complex.
Yeah, they give you half off rent and shit like that.
As moonlighting or, yeah, whatever. And it's possible that courtesy officer. So when she left the apartment building, he was aware of her leaving, possibly jumped into his vehicle, and then, you know, could have been a marked car, could have been his own car. We have no idea if he was in uniform, not in uniform, or whatever. It could have been that he pulled over as a police officer and said, "Hey, you want to ride home?" And who doesn't trust the police, right? Which would be the scariest potential outcome. I don't know for a fact that all that's what happened, but I do know he was a courtesy officer in the dwelling that he was at. And if she was visiting that apartment, that could have been a way for their paths to cross. Otherwise, no, why, they wouldn't know each other. But how would you expect a 22-year-old to know a 16-year-old? Once you kind of crash that threshold over 18, you really shouldn't be, you know, associating with people who are substantially younger than you. I know it happens, but there's no reason for him to have known her. Yeah.
It happens a lot.
Kendra spends a lot of time currently hanging out with a 16-year-old. So
no,
kind of weird.
Don't put that into the universe. Okay.
No, it's not weird. You know, they just hang out and they watch movies about gladiators and
no.
No, it's not happening. Kendra would never do anything weird. Kendra, case in point, doesn't hang out with any other human beings, so she's safe from all allegations.
I'm trying to make it a point not to.
Other than being a lonely spinster, no allegation can possibly stick to her at this point.
Well, I need people. You know what? If I could find a friend who wouldn't judge me for staring at the wall and punching holes through the bottom of my glass containers and collecting vials of, you know, salt and vinegar coffee to stare at and to taste days later. You know, if I could find somebody that wouldn't judge me for all that, then I would have friends. But so far, no such luck, you know. And I just smell like Zap chips all the time.
The search for friendship continues for another week for Kendra. Folks, thanks for tuning into this rather unstructured episode of True Crime. Again, it was a little different because it was a viewer submission. Yeah. We appreciate viewer submissions. I will say, though, that if you're going to submit a case, submit a really good one.
This is a good one. It'll probably be even better when everything comes out, and it'll make more sense. We'll do some updates.
Let's. We like to cover cases that have been fully adjudicated because what I hate, and you'll hear this if you've ever heard any podcast I've ever done, is I hate using the word alleged. I want to be dealing in facts, not in speculation. I don't want to be dealing in charges, warrants, indictments, allegations. I want to be dealing with what the court holds to be true. I want to be dealing with convictions. I want to be dealing with documents of some kind. And we have indictments on this. We have warrants. We have a fired officer here. We've got coroner's reports and things going forward to trial in June. But I did have to stop in the middle of this episode and say, this isn't really a true crime because no one's been convicted of this yet. So a stipulation going forward is if you're going to bring a case to us, it has to like technically be a crime. Somebody needs to be convicted of that because I don't want to be throwing out allegedly. Now that doesn't mean that we're not going to be talking about other suspects or other people that might've gotten away with it or whatever, or mysteries. I love mysteries, but we kind of just engaged in the rumor mill tonight because we're reporting somewhat on the news that this guy's been charged, but as it stands right now, Miles Bryant is innocent of this crime until proven guilty in a court of law. And that is the basis of our society. And if we flush that away, we're just a mob. So that's how it is for now. Kendra, rant over.
Okay. I was trying to dig for one of those quotes from the scenes that I made you watch from I Think You Should Leave. But I couldn't find them.
I think we should both leave. What do you say?
I think so, too.
All right. Coming up tomorrow, it's Wednesday. It's all the news that you need to get up to speed but not get depressed. Derek's going to take care of you on Thursday. If you want to know what's all that, but sports. Thursday is the same as Wednesday, but later, and also just sports. Then on Friday, we're going to have another classic breakdown for you. On the other side of the weekend, we will be back with Uncuffed Comedy. And next week, an exciting case of true crime. Kendra, go ahead and give us a preview of next week.
Well, it's a crime that occurred in a place at a time with a suspect and a victim.
Is there a conviction yet in this one?
Yes.
Sweet. Yes.
That's all.
All right. That's the end of the show. Thanks. Zaps chips. We appreciate you. Kendra's fingers and her whole body smells like voodoo Zaps chips. Guns up. Giddy up. Good night, everyone.